tuned in to the internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board from AboveTopSecret.com. This is ATS. ATS Mix.
Government conspiracies, government cover-ups, you know, political scandals. People are taking the time to research it, look into it.
And that's another area I think where we stand out is that we embrace discussion of everything and don't necessarily find one topic.
Hedonism, if you will, of AboveTopSecret.com. If nothing else, we're getting a whole lot of people interested in the questions.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com starts now.
It's the same dream night after night. I hear this beating, this rhythm. I'm wandering like an unfulfilled lost soul through this misty haze. But I keep following the sound. It seems like I walk forever. In the distance I see something beautiful, magnificent. It seems so far away, yet so near that I can reach out and touch it. As I approach closer, I can see millions of people, all ages, races, religions, philosophies. People from around the world and from every nation on terrestrial Earth. They're moving in mass towards something mystical, magical, magnetic. As I follow them, all of a sudden they begin to create a path for me to walk through. I can see something massive on the horizon. As I get closer, I see a banner unfurling in the gentle wind. It says, "Welcome to the revolution." The crowd begins cheering and celebrating. I'm so overwhelmed by the experience that I wake, still hearing the beating of the heart. And then my dream becomes crystal clear. I have found my holy grail. My thirst is quenched. My lifelong quest finally achieved. I have found AboveTopSecret.com. And my beating heart joins theirs. I have become a member. Welcome to our revolution. AboveTopSecret.com.
ATS. The following is an exclusive ATS Mix special report.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this edition of the special edition of the ATS Mix, which is what we're going to call the post-election special. And we have with us tonight our CEO from AboveTopSecret.com, a.k.a. Skeptic Overlord, but we lovingly call him Bill Irvin. Hi, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing well. How's everyone over there?
Not bad. In addition to that, we have another very special guest from the Above Politics show, newly anointed co-host. I think this guy goes by the name of Homer Five. Hi, Homer. How are you?
Dave, I'm fantastic. How are you and Johnny doing?
Well, we're not doing so bad. And speaking of the Johninator, my loving co-host, the wind beneath my wings, if you will, Mr. Johnny Anonymous. Hi, Johnny.
Hi, how are you? Can I suggest you change your deodorant? The smell from beneath your wings is getting a little irritating.
Yeah, bite me. Okay, well, here's a concept of this show, folks. We are all sitting around in the studio at the ATS Mix Studio facilities in beautiful downtown Burbank, and we're going to talk about what transpired yesterday as we're recording this, and the election of Barack Obama, the first African-American contestant to win the election for the President of the United States. And I guess, Bill, if you would start us off as the top of the echelon ladder, what were your reactions or what were the things going around in your neck of the woods, Bill, when all this was taking place?
Well, New York, and I'm here in Buffalo, New York. You know, not too long ago was in New York City. A couple years ago, it was pretty much a sure thing. Not pretty much. It was definitely a sure thing that Obama was going to carry the state. So it really there wasn't a lot going on here. Mainly what we saw were a lot of hotly contested local battles for some state positions and a couple Senate seats, things like that. And those were also sort of, you know, ho-hum, because pretty much from what I can tell, Democrats won across the board. I haven't looked at some of the local races yet. I've been pretty busy today. So that wasn't there wasn't really anything surprising here in New York. The battleground states, there's a lot of news coming out that those were just mayhem. And so right. How about you guys? What did you see on your end of things?
Johnny, you go first since you're out in the Western territory.
Well, it was, as previously mentioned, a landmark historic day. I myself stayed up till about 5:30 in the morning just watching some of the news media cover the results. And I even taped it because I knew if Barack won, that this was going to be a historical day for everybody to remember it. I wanted to be able to have that in my own personal collection. Well, some of the things I thought that was kind of interesting was when they did go to some of the other live feeds from across the world, like in Africa and some of the other foreign countries, there appeared to be a lot of jubilation over the prospects of having a president of color elected into America, and I found that very interesting.
Homer, how about you? Where do you live at, Homer?
I am in South Carolina, and I guess like everybody else, I had mixed emotions. When me and my wife went to vote, we felt very much a part of history, even though I was definitely not an Obama supporter. It was still amazing to look around me and see the number of young voters that were stepping up to the plate and making themselves heard. And so you couldn't help but feel humbled by being a part of something that was very historic. My state, of course, went traditionally Republican, but as we can see, Obama was accepted pretty much worldwide.
Yeah, and of course, everybody knows by now that I'm from Dallas, Texas, and Texas has been pretty much a Republican state, unfortunately, and I don't have to worry about Dixie chick backlash for me, but unfortunately, George Bush, you know, is a little bit down south of Dallas from where I'm located, but I actually went out on Tuesday with the intent, honestly, to record some of the people's comments and things. And then as I got out there, I decided not to because it was so overwhelming to just see people stand there like zombies and just take a step further or whatever. And not all polling places. And I went to probably about 20 polling places in the Dallas area. Some of them had long lines. Some of them you could walk right in. And I did take an opportunity to talk to a lot of people. I talked to a lot of white people, a lot of African Americans, some Hispanic people. And I think the consensus was, even though I didn't say, hey, who are you voting for, because I thought that would have been a little bit rude, I did ask them what they thought about the historical aspect of what they were taking place. And without exception, I have never seen such pride in people about doing something that most people take for granted and never do in their life. And I'm guilty of that, I have to admit. And that is just simply casting their vote and hoping to make a difference for something new to come. And, you know, I think that's what really grabbed me the most. Feel free to jump in on this one and just, you know, anybody have any observations on people that they saw or met or friends or whatever. Bill, how about you? Did you have anybody after the thing took place that, you know, you talked to or observed?
No, I was hoping to, but the polling place was dead, really. I mean, you walked in, you signed the sheet, and you could step right in and vote. And it was the antiquated old pull lever voting machines that that they still use mostly across New York State. But I want to touch on something Johnny said, and then something you said too, Dave. That you know, you said people were hoping to cast a vote for change. And Johnny mentioned that a lot of people had pride in Obama being the first black American to be voted in. And, you know, I think his background and his race and his color had some effect here. But also I think he crossed that boundary because he ran more of a forward-looking campaign than we've seen in a long time. He used the word us more often than he used I or me. And exactly. That was, I think, the magic that allowed him to cross the boundaries and get the entire country, for the most part, you know, a 53% of the popular vote behind him and wanting to see that new direction take place.
And Bill, I'm not going to argue with you because obviously I can't. He did use the word us a lot. However, I think that for us to ignore the fact that this election had an incredible racial element to it is to ignore exactly what happened. Maybe it was more prevalent in my area being here in the South, but race played a huge, huge issue in it here as far as getting people out to vote. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing because it's not. But I think that a lot of people stepped up to the plate and went to vote that would never have voted if it hadn't have been for the racial issue.
Oh, certainly. It was historic in an epic way because of that. But and in a lot of areas that were predominantly of color or other minorities, yeah, he did incredibly well. But he also, I mean, there's still a lot of states out there where he did very well, where that wasn't a factor. And he spoke more towards bringing people together. And that, I think, that was the deciding factor in his campaign. Without that, if he was just Barack Obama, a black American running a campaign, he may not have won, but he had an incredible campaign strategy that found a way to speak beyond the border of race and bring more people in.
One of the things that I can recall prior to actually getting the results of this in the months that preceded this election, one of the things that I found kind of interesting in a crazy, chaotic way was how disturbing a lot of the comments were as to the background of Mr. Obama. You know, we heard that, he claims to be a Christian, but really he's a Muslim. You know, you hear all this crazy stuff that's going on. And one of the things that I started thinking about right after they made the results available to the world was I was wondering, oh, wow, this is not only going to be monumental, but there's going to be a lot of people watching the actual swearing-in process to see if Barack Obama does indeed lay his hand on the Bible when he gets sworn in. Have any of you thought about that?
I didn't think it was an issue. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, a person's religion has no business in politics, and I mean that from my heart. And I think it was just a lot of fear-mongering. There's a lot of people that were afraid of Barack Obama becoming president, and now their worst fears have come to light.
Well, yeah, that's going to be an interesting sideline story, and it may even become a major story over the transition period and beyond, is the speculation of his background. And it's more than just Muslim. There's lots of other speculation about what he's going to do once he's in office, and some of it is because of an apparent Muslim background. But even, you know, like you said, even if he were Muslim, I mean, big deal. I mean, most of the Muslims in the world do not want to kill Christians, and it's really not that big of a deal.
All right, well, speaking about the reaction around the world, I mean, we're all watching TV, I'm sure, regardless of which channel we're getting, whatever, the same pretty much stuff on mainstream media. I switched between ABC and CNN, and they were pretty much the same. But you know what I found really amazing is when, like, as Johnny had said...
If I could jump in? Could I just jump in? Just so we don't lose that point. I made a point as I saw the numbers coming in of switching over to Fox News just before 10 o'clock Eastern time, before the California numbers came in. And it was as if somebody shot somebody's puppy in that studio.
They did, Bill.
Yeah. They were all looked around and they said, well, Fox News is... calling Obama as the next president of the United States, and there was like a solid 15 seconds of silence as all the talking heads were looking behind them at the big tote board that had the numbers, and it was like a funeral. It was the aura of a funeral in that set.
Well, you know, back to what I was getting ready to say, Bill, and I appreciate you dropping that in on us. You know, Johnny made a very good point when he talked about the things around the world. Now, we're all watching TV, as I said, regardless of which channel it was, because everybody made a point to show the reaction around the world. And we're talking United Kingdom, Germany, France, Russia. The one I especially enjoyed is Obama, Africa. And that was pretty amazing to see the satellite feeds of these people sitting around into an American election because of a black man is involved in the election process, not only involved in the election process, but on the eve of actually getting elected in the election process. And that's what I thought was really amazing.
It was. And again, it just adds to the entire historical element. But, you know, Dave, I'll tell you, I think that Barack, as much misgivings as I might have had about him with his recent selection as Rahm Emanuel as his chief of staff, I mean, he goes out and he immediately picks a Jewish congressman to be his chief of staff. Now, that was the right move.
So you're thinking that he's making a lot of decisions from a strictly a what looks good to the public standpoint?
They all do. I mean, let's face it. Why was Sarah Palin picked as a running mate for John McCain? It was all appearances. It was appearances and to get the Hillary vote. But the whole thing, this is all politics is all about appearances. And I believe that, you know, you can call it appearances. I call it Obama reaching out to the rest of the world. And I'm really starting to come over here onto his side more and more as I see some of the actions that he's doing immediately after this election.
I always thought that the reason why Palin was chosen was because she looked good with an AK-47 in a bikini.
No argument there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, Sarah Palin. All right. Now, you know, I mean, now, since obviously she lost and now we can make, you know, comments. I mean, from her Saturday Night Live bit that she did and whatever, I mean, you know, and I thought it was funnier than hell. I mean, I really did. I really thought it took a lot of guts to get up there and have yourself ridiculed. But what is everybody's take on, did that hurt the campaign? And, Bill, I want to start with you since we have you back online now. Did that hurt the McCain-Palin ticket by her getting on Saturday Night Live and allowing herself to be made a fool of?
I think that probably actually helped her, but her presence definitely hurt the campaign. I like what Bill Maher referred to her as in one of his appearances. I think it was on a late show. It wasn't his actual show, but he referred to her as the spokesmodel from the auto show.
I love
that. And yeah, that really does, you know, that describes what she really represents. And I think it's clear that the Republicans and conservatives are going to be doing a lot of soul searching, and there's a lot of fingers, a lot of things to point fingers at, and a lot of fingers to be pointing, and there's going to be some damage control, and I'm sure Sarah Palin feels that she's going to return to the national stage. I can't see how that would be allowed.
But, Bill, you know, appearances and the picture in my mind of Sarah Palin laying across the hood of an 04 Mustang. don't you think that Sarah Palin brought a much needed element of a core conservative ideology into this campaign? Because McCain sure doesn't represent this. I mean, McCain is a rhino more than he is anything. And in steps Sarah Palin, who truly panders to the core conservatives. And I feel like, my opinion, we'd have had a better chance with her as the actual candidate and maybe McCain as the VP.
No, I don't think so. And when I think of a definition of a core conservative, I really don't see any contemporary Republicans fitting that role. And I think, really, I tend to lean much more towards traditional conservatism than I do liberal policies. I really want to see a very small government and the states and much more broader states' rights. And those aren't the kinds of things that Sarah Palin talked about. She wasn't really – she was a neoconservative – she was an evangelical combination of an evangelical and a neoconservative mouthpiece, and she was just blabbing talking points that she's heard, you know, throughout her time being a Republican up there in Alaska and reading. Well, I guess she reads every damn newspaper and magazine. Is that it?
Yeah, like a doctor's. She has a doctor's office discount, if I'm not
That's
mistaken.
Right.
In a bikini.
You know, right.
Well, she has to get her information from somewhere. It is Alaska, right, after all.
That's right. I mean, I really would love to see someone who is a traditional conservative reemerge on the Republican side of things. I think, you know, Ron Paul, even though he was a freak in several categories.
Oh, yeah.
But some of his core principles were a solid throwback to what real conservatism is. And
so, you know, you're aligning more than with the Libertarian Party, because I mean, I've always considered Ron Paul to be just an almost, you know, they're calling him a constitutionalist, but basically he's a pure libertarian.
Well, actually, contemporary libertarians are much more like what real conservatism is from the 50s and 60s. And, you know, Reagan, a lot of people think that Reagan was the last real conservative. I tend to think that Nixon was more the last real conservative. And that's the type of conservatism I think. I mean, he was a scoundrel. He was a despicable man, but he really was a true conservative and did his best, despite his other traits, to be a good president.
Well, speaking of despicable men, I'd like to chime in right now. thank you very much. I'll be here all week.
Yeah.
one thing that I kind of noticed, and I wanted to find out what you guys thought about this. You know, I'm sure we've all witnessed the candidates, when the results are released, how they come forward and they either do the thank you or here's my condolences, we didn't win speech. I thought that McCain did a very gracious, not necessarily an apology, but a kind of a thank you of support to everybody, and that he was also going to be showing his support to Barack now that he was going to be our president. And I kept hearing booing going on. And yet when Barack was on stage thanking everybody, and he mentioned Senator McCain and what type of route that McCain had gone, people were applauding and clapping. And did you guys happen to notice that? Didn't you think, wow, that, a lot of salt and pepper going on there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I hate to say it, but that's my party. You know, Obama represented everything that is anti-Republican. You know, from the increase in taxes to the government, to the increase in government, to a lot of the policies that he is intending on implementing. And it was a very emotional time. And I'm not going to make apologies for him, because I thought the booing was absolutely, it was horrible. And I saw it, and I wasn't proud at that moment to be a Republican.
Well, you know, I'm going to jump in here real quick because, I'm moderator, and I'm going to jump in real quick. But here's the thing that chapped my butt, okay? Now, agree, disagree, I'm open to hear what you guys have to say. But this is the thing that really chapped my butt about the McCain speech. I thought he did a marvelous job. I concur with everything you guys have said. I thought it was very it was everything I thought he was capable of doing with the background that he came from and his service to our country. I thought it was an absolutely marvelous speech. I loved his thing where he told people, now, and he kept trying to, you know, calm down as Homer said, you know, some of the hecklers and things. But, you know, it really chapped my butt because I just hate this thing to where it's like we're in high school. You know, and you got XYZ High School over there and the other guys over here, and they remember how they used to introduce the visiting cheerleaders? Well, of course, everybody loved the cheerleaders, but I mean, they'd introduce the mascot or some weirdo dressed up in a Pelican outfit, who knows? but, you know, it just used to chap my butt that, you know, it's no big deal. It's simply a statement, and these people are trying to take it on a personal level. Now, the reason why I'm segueing into this is there is an article that is on AboveTopSecret.com right now that was posted by a gentleman from England, the United Kingdom, and his name is Timelike. And it really has a bunch of stars and a bunch of flags. And this was simply a guy, a young man, that wanted to congratulate President-elect Obama, and he wanted this thread to be from people outside America. I mean, it's in his thread topic title. It says, congratulations to President-elect Obama from people outside America. Now, I don't know, unless you're blind or you have no concept of what it means, I was looking forward to seeing what other people from other countries had to say. And the very first one from Bulgaria, you know, great thread, congrats from Bulgaria, and he goes on, blah, blah. Of course, he makes a comment, you've chosen the smaller evil. Well, you know, they're entitled to their opinion, and that's fine. And then you get down to a few more, and then here's all the Americans jumping in here, and they start talking about, you know, bashing Obama this and doing this and doing that. And then the guy tries taking control, which I really applauded him for, saying, hey, you know, this is congratulations, you know, from people outside of the United States, you know. And I mean, it's got like five or six pages. And without exception, every page has some numbnut that's sitting here, doesn't understand that this is from people outside of America and, you know, are trying to put their two cents in. And Bill, this gets back to the reason why a masterful area was created in the Decision 2008 U.S. election thread, where we put up things to where people could go and talk about the Obama election results, regional election results, you know, for McCain also. And then we had an area that you created, Bill. I want you to tell everybody a little bit about the reasons why we did this, because we've had a lot of UTUs and people bitching about their stuff going there, and I think they ought to know. Mud and Mayhem was one of my favorites, because that's kind of everybody kind of lets their hair down on that one. But, Bill, what was the main reason why we decided to do this?
Well, it's and I'll get to some of the reasons it lend itself to why people were booing at the McCain speech last night. But there is such madness that comes over people when they begin to speak passionately about politics, especially when they're debating someone on the other side of whatever rhetorical fence they're sitting. And we've seen in 2004 just an incredible explosion of multiple topics multiple threads, rather. They're all pretty much covering the same topic as people try to get their voice in. And what we did is we tried to make sure that we reined that in and have groups in, you know, a thread for this discussion, a thread for that discussion, and be a little proactive about controlling what's going on and just letting people have their say in a much more controlled environment. And I think it did a really good job of keeping things under control. But the reason goes for why we have to take control is, you know, on Above Top Secret, we really want to make sure that people behave on our discussion board the same way as they would in mixed company, in real life, talking to someone face to face and being civil in their discussions. And what's happening in politics, and I'm sure, Homer, you're going to agree, is we've seen over the past, I think it's about 30 years, a real ratcheting up of the rhetoric of hate between the two parties. And that is the sort of the pinnacle of this progress that we've seen, or the progression rather, towards this one party hating the other no matter what. And that people just, they booed this incredible historic event. It's essentially what they did, is these McCain supporters couldn't see past the Republican buttons on their lapels, and they ended up booing what is really an incredible historic event for the country. And that is a direct result of this creation of hate the other guy at all cost.
I couldn't agree more. And I think exactly what you're talking about is this diversity that we're seeing here, where no matter how much I may disagree with your views, Bill, or your views, Dave, or your views, Johnny, we're all out after the same thing, which is the betterment of our country and the betterment of our way of life. And yet we can't seem to see that because you may back a Democrat point of view, I have to hate you because I'm a Republican. And I think the creation of that special section stopped, in my opinion, one thing much as anything else. We want people to get their voices in, absolutely. But what we don't want them doing is jumping in, shouting everybody else's voices down.
Right, getting into a screaming match. John, you got something out there in California?
Unfortunately, I do, Dave. One of the other things that I'm just an observer in life. That's pretty much what I am, just an observer in life. And one of the other things I observed last night, I mentioned about the acceptance speech and the apology speech. The other thing I noticed was, did anybody else seem to wonder why the acceptance speech or the thank you speech that came from Barack Obama was very highly sensationalized, almost in the entertainment factor? Did anybody else happen to notice that?
Oh, I noticed it, Johnny. But I think that was his whole campaign. That was his whole method to his madness.
Yeah, I think the incredible throng of people in Chicago there cheering and anticipating his arrival on stage was a very powerful picture, and it was clearly a powerful picture, you know, expertly painted for just that purpose, to drive home the popular the throng of popular emotion that has come up because of his win. I mean, they're, you know, seeing Oprah in the crowd crying, and it was that kind of thing. It was expertly painted to create a message for the world to see, essentially, is what it was.
Yeah, and, you Bill know, being, Oprah, Oprah, I'm sorry, go ahead, Johnny.
Well, I was just going to mention that being at one time in the TV medium as a professional, I happened to notice that this appeared to be highly choreographed to the point of where, all right, you, cameraman three, you need to be right here when Reverend Jackson starts getting that tear welling up, you let us know so we can flash immediately to that. And then the same thing with Oprah, the same thing. Here she is leaning on the shoulders and she's got tears streaming down. I just found the whole thing choreographed, even down to the point of commercials. I noticed that when I was watching Anderson and Wolf Blitzer do their the preface parts to it, they kept saying, in the anticipation part where, and we understand Barack Obama is going to be coming out to give out his speech, and we're going to go to some commercials right now, and if by chance he comes out, we're going to interrupt those commercials. And I was thinking, wow, what a great way to sell to the advertisers that they're going to be having to hang on. So that slot's going to cost you another $250,000, GE. You know, that's, I found it so scripted, it was driving me nuts. Did you guys notice that too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really did. You know, I just popped up CNN's site, and they owe us advertising money, Bill. If you would send them a bill, I'd appreciate it. But I just the one reason why I liked their site online is because of the results map, the way they have it laid out. And I just clicked onto this. Now this is what I find really, really amazing. And, you know, they were kind of referring to it wasn't a landslide, but it was a severe ass-kicking. But Vermont is a perfect example. Now, I find this really amazing. 67% of the state that voted, or the percentage that voted, voted for Obama. 67%.
Exactly. And there's not that many minorities in Vermont, I can tell you.
Now I'm segueing into where I'm going with this. In Johnny's beloved, you know, country out there in the California land.
Yeah, we're a country all our own.
61% of that state, which has a hell of a mixture of Hispanic and African Americans.
We're a Heinz 57, I tell
you.
You
had 61% there. Now, here's something even more interesting. Illinois, 62%. In the states that he won big in, the numbers were phenomenal, because every other one that I've rolled over has been almost like a 60-40 or a, you know, 54, you know, 48 or whatever the numbers happen to come out to. Now, the thing that's really chapping my ass is Missouri and North Carolina. And that's because I cannot award the points, and I'm getting all these damn U2Us for the results of whatever the hell those things are.
Contest. Spit it out.
I know, but I was
ATS rolling. ATS poll.
No, the one. What the hell is the votes they get when they? What do they call?
Electoral vote.
Thank
Electoral.
You. I'm so sorry. I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. I've got
pop-up. It's a good thing you're the mediator here.
Hey, I've got pop-up windows going left and right. I panicked for a second. All right.
This show's going to hell.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's like one of our regular shows. But here's the thing. Here I got all these. I got like 30 UTUs today going, where the hell's my points? Because they've gotten close on the electoral vote count. But it's because I can't award it because they haven't made a decision. I tell you, this is what I find really amazing. Missouri, there are less than 4,000 votes that separate these two candidates. 4,000 votes out of 3 million. That is amazing to me. Does anybody find that amazing?
Yeah, I think North Carolina was actually closer, wasn't it?
Well, actually, North Carolina is a difference of about 13,000.
Oh, is it? Okay.
13,000. But my God, you're talking about less than 3,000 votes, some odd, separates the two candidates, and that's why they can't decide who the electoral vote. Not that it's going to matter, but it matters to the membership who has a shot at winning some points. You know,
it's a total of 26 electoral votes between those two.
Yeah. I mean, it's a nothing thing, but it just amazes me that those two, which were toss-up states too. I think that's another interesting thing. Now, how did you feel when you saw Ohio go to Barack, Bill, I'll go with you first.
I knew it was over. Especially Pennsylvania and Ohio, that's what everyone was speculating on, is those two would see, would sort of set the tone for the night, especially by the margin of victory that they were seeing in the exit polls, and it certainly did show that was the case, and even soon as 9 o'clock, there were reports that McCain's strategists were starting to say there's no possible way that we see a win, and that information was coming out of the McCain campaign pretty soon.
How about you, Horn?
Pretty much the same sentiment. I mean, it's my opinion that Obama ran effectively a perfect campaign. I cannot fault the campaign that he ran. Somebody mentioned before Oprah crying. You don't see that. I mean, last time you saw that was when her chef quit for a week. And
oh, but I'm Bob.
Well, I mean, seriously, Obama's campaign appealed. He appealed to the senses of the masses. I mean, never once. And I think this is historic as well in this. I don't think he ever once truly addressed the issues. But what he did was a fantastic mass appeal with the mainstream media, with cameras being on him at perfect times, and I hate to say this, but certain tragedies in his life that occurred at exactly the right time to elicit sympathy. I have no fault in any campaign that he ran. And again, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida was a biggie. When those went, McCain just threw his hands up in the air and came out and gave a wonderful concession speech, as he rightfully should.
I actually think Obama did cover the issues, but I think it was expertly just enough so that he was laying the groundwork for the essence of a platform, but not so much. He wasn't pulling back the kimono so much that there was ammunition for some serious attacks that could rip what little we knew apart. And I think as part of a perfect campaign, that was the core strategy that really played to his advantage. But I want to raise... go ahead.
I was just going to say I can't argue with you there, Bill. I think that yeah. Now, when I was saying he didn't talk about any issues, I think you're correct. I think he talked about them exactly. I mean, I can't fault his campaign in any way.
Right. But I want to... he ran a great campaign, but I think we're... that's almost a narrow... too much of a narrow look at things. And if we could digress here into a little bit of a more serious aspect of this. After all, we are a conspiracy theory website, and let's talk about that angle.
Where'd you hear that from?
Well, you know, that's I've heard that's what we're supposed to talk about.
Mark's been out there with his placards again.
Now, I mean, this whole, I mean, irregardless of the fact that, you know, Barack Obama is a black man, as we talked about before, but getting back to what he represented is a very well-planned, forward-looking campaign that spoke just enough about his plans, but not too much. And he did do an excellent job of establishing himself as something incredibly different than what we've ever had before. And, you know, hold that piece in your mind as sort of what I think is a unusual, much larger seismic shift that is happening out there. And what I mean is in a Newsweek magazine, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, I was reading, there was a great article by Richard Haass. Does anyone know who Richard Haass is?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, he is the president on the Council for Foreign Relations. Now, here is the group about which a lot of conspiracy theory is written, the CFR. The damn CFR, as a lot of conspiracy people would say. I mean, this group, this think tank, creates policies and ideas and recommendations that are the core of the conspiracies that we've been speculating about for the past 8 years. He wrote a article titled "The World That Awaits," and basically what it was a long list of advice for the next president. And in this article, the president of the CFR is saying we have to stop making other countries be like us. We need to be more concerned about what countries do and less concerned about what kind of government they have. Now, that's a huge seismic shift in opinion from something like the CFR. And I'm wondering, I want to toss this out for broader discussion. I'm wondering if the past 12 to 15 years of the internet and the incredible groundswell in allowing people to become aware, more aware of what's happening in the world. And especially, you know, the long litany of conspiracy sites, you know, us, and there's also, you know, there's Jeff Rentz, there's Alex Jones, there's the list of high profile conspiracy people that are on the internet and talking about all these things is quite a background noise, and it does get into popular discussion quite a bit. And then there's just thousands and thousands of other people out there, and I'm wondering, and I'll toss this out to discussion, has that had a cumulative influence where it essentially created, if you will, a petri dish where the where the message of Obama was allowed to grow and take hold and eventually to become so strong that, you know, enough people wanted change and voted for that change?
John?
Okay, I have a quick question. I'm sorry, I kind of got a little lost here with what the actual question is. Is it, so did the internet influence? Is that what you're?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Has
the internet helped everyone in this country to become so much more aware than they normally would have that it was everyone collectively decided it's time for change?
Okay. Then now that I know where you were going with it, yes, I will address that. Yeah, I think the internet played a huge part in this.
I'm not talking about the campaign. I'm talking about in influencing the core, the background noise of the culture, if you will, so that, you know, over a period of time, you know, between ATS and all these other sites that are out there doing our best to get these topics into popular discussion. I mean, if you think about it, don't tase me, bro. That was a conspiracy theorist. And he created a popular cultural lexicon while he was protesting. So has this affected the culture in a way where it made Barack Obama's victory possible?
Okay, I'm going to let Homer go first then while I think about this a little bit. Well, because I was going off on a different direction. I thought you were going somewhere else, Bill, and thank you for clarifying that for me. Okay. But now I need to change my answer. So, Homer?
Well, I'm fine because I think I agree with Bill. I think that and I'm going to get even deeper into the conspiracy aspect of this. I think that it's almost impossible now to not move into a new world order of sorts. And let me clarify that. Me personally, I believe that the internet and the way the internet is starting to influence world economics, world politics, you almost can't help but construe the internet as being a sort of a new world order. There's an entire shift in mankind's epiphany, and that's not the word I'm looking for. It's an entire shift in mankind's outlook because of the internet, because of the vast immediate access to information anymore. You don't wait for it. You get it right from the source. People are doing their own research now. And I agree with Bill. I think that it's not just a conspiracy so much as anymore as it's a fact of life.
Well, I am not even going to address this from the standpoint that I think you two guys really did a masterful job on the thing. But like Johnny, you know, I want to talk about how impactful the fact that Obama created this huge grassroots movement through the internet affected the outcome. John, will you take us down that road, maybe?
Well, now I'm. Sure.
You shifting his gears for him.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
No, we can get back to that. I want to hear what Johnny thinks about the main idea. Then we can get back to that because I have comments about that too.
All right.
Oh God.
Sorry, John. Right. I threw you an apple.
Yeah, I have another quick comment on what.
Thank you, Homer.
I'll give you just a more than a second. You know, Dave, I agree. I think that Obama. I think I want to raise and pay for this. I think Obama benefited from the internet campaign. However, I think that you have to take a look at how unsuccessful Ron Paul's internet campaign was. He was successful in raising money. However, it didn't draw the grassroots results that he needed. And so I think it can go either way as far as the internet goes. You get a lot of people on the internet that may jump into a campaign and say, this is my candidate, and they're 12 years old.
Yeah, but no offense to the libertarians or Ron Paul, but I mean, there's a hell of a big difference, though, Homer, between the Libertarian Party and the Democratic Party. And, you know, I mean, if the Libertarian Party was even on equal keel with Republicans and Democrats, I agree with what you just got through saying. But, I mean, there is no way the Libertarian Party is ever, in my estimation, this is
Ron Paul's a Ron Paul's a Republican.
Well, whatever. Then why do you say Libertarian for?
You said Libertarian.
Well, hell, it doesn't matter. But I guess the point is that Ron Paul never had a chance in hell to win. I know it. You know it. Everybody knows it. I mean, you can be as passionate as you want to about Ron Paul. He did not have a chance to win. I don't care what party he was.
That's the point I was making, though, Dave. It was even with the incredible internet backing that he had, he never stood a chance.
No, because I think what happened is, while the internet really helped raise awareness of Ron Paul, it ended up hurting him more than helping him, because more people became aware of him and realized that, well, yeah, he's got some good ideas. He's too much of a crank to be president. Really, and I like Ron Paul. I really like his outspokenness. I really like his passion, and he's clearly a smart guy that has a firm grasp on history and economics. But he's not, like I said, he's too much of a crank to be president, and that's what I think a lot of people ended up realizing.
All right, well, you know, let's talk about Dennis Kucinich. We had him on the ATS Mix show, as everybody's aware.
Did Johnny have something to say about the whole internet thing? I think
no, but we're going to get back to John. I want to stay with this thought.
That makes twice I got shut down.
Sorry,
on this
sorry.
Show.
I know I suck as moderator. Okay.
Holy crap!
Sorry. But let's talk about Dennis Kucinich just for a second. I thought, and Johnny thought, that he was a tremendously intelligent, you know, competitor in the race before he dropped out. What, and now, you know, this gets back to Ron Paul. Now, you said Ron Paul was a crackpot. Is that what you said, Homer?
He said crank.
No, crackpot. Crank, and I agree.
All right. Now, what was the downfall for Kucinich?
Oh, I got this one.
Rock and roll, baby puppy.
Let me tell you something, guys. When you're running a major political campaign, there are some things you just don't talk about. And citing UFOs is top on the list. He could not have committed political suicide any faster than he did by discussing that issue.
I disagree. I disagree. He did not bring that up. He was asked that, and I think he was asked that on purpose to discredit him.
But Johnny, at some point in his political life, I mean, he's been a politician most of his life. At some point, he told somebody about that, or it wouldn't have been fodder to have been brought up as cannon fire here. That's what I'm saying. I'm not talking
what,
about
what
right
happened.
At that moment.
What happened, as far as from what I understand, is he is the godfather to Shirley MacLaine, one of Shirley MacLaine's relatives. And because Shirley MacLaine sometimes is thought of to be kind of a nut herself.
Yes.
Well, I figure I could say that since Bill called Ron Paul a crank. Yeah, we're all going to hell in a handbag after this show. I know that. I really believe that that was engineered and instrumental. You know, look, everybody's got some type of something in their closet, you know. So Dennis Kucinich has a thought or belief in possibly there being life existing elsewhere. So what? According to national polls, so does 73% of the U.S. and the globe for that matter. But in this particular instance, and I don't necessarily disagree with you, Homer, on the fact that that was a turning point in his candidacy, but I do definitely think that that question was engineered specifically to have him appear to have egg on his face, for the lack of a better word.
Of course it was, Johnny, but he set himself up for it. And regardless of what the historical reasons were for him having seen this UFO, and I don't doubt the fact that the man saw a UFO, and I don't doubt your numbers that 70-some percent of the people in the United States believe in UFOs. I'm not doubting that. I'm just saying they don't want to hear that from their political candidates. I'm telling you, if Barack Obama stood up the 24 hours before the election and said that he had seen an alien autopsy film in person, Barack Obama would not be the president-elect as we're sitting here right now.
And yet a lot of people, and I'm sure you have to know this, Homer, you know, President Carter saw one outside the balcony of the White House, and he told people about it. And that is the number one question he is always asked about. Tell me about this UFO sighting you had. Ronald Reagan gets up before the UN and says, hey, I wonder what kind of world this would be if we all had to mass together because there was a threat outside this place we call Earth. So it's nothing new.
No, but they were both presidents at the time. And you can't really bring up Carter. I mean, you want to talk about Ron Paul being a crank. I mean, come on.
Send those U2Us to Homer5 at... All right, well, let's get off this BS for a second, because I got to ask Bill a question. Bill, you know, I mean, you're pretty astute, and Homer is very astute. But
and
Bill,
if not anything else, you're just pretty.
Yeah, we pretty. Like you. We like you a lot, pretty. Bill. All right, but here's the deal. I mean, what, in your estimation, I want to get everybody's opinion on this. I'll throw my two cents in if you guys haven't already covered it. But I want to start with Bill. What was the one thing, Bill, that you believe, whether it be the debates or whatever happened once they started being head-to-head legitimate candidates, was there one thing that you can think of or you remember that you felt was the difference that started turning the tide towards Obama as opposed to McCain?
I don't think it was any one specific statement or thing, because there was, you know, if you watch the daily polls, there really were no spikes or valleys even for Obama. It was all pretty consistent. I think the thing was more his consistency, his consistent poise when he's on camera and speaking, that gave him a gravitas that has not really been seen that much. I mean, he clearly came across as an educated man who is able to speak to anyone. And that poise and that presence of his, I think, is what it was the deciding factor in this case.
Johnny, anything you picked up on?
You know, I think that, and I think we may even have mentioned this in one of our earlier Skeptic Overlord shows, this election... or the road with the candidates appeared to be one of the most aggressive by the Republicans that I have ever seen place. And I, no offense there, Homer, to your blessed party, but it seemed like it was an extremely aggressive and almost malicious attack like route that they went. And yet, as Bill said, it in Barack's camp, it appeared that he was attempting the best he could to maintain a passive composure during all of it. But it almost, in my opinion, it seemed like the Republicans were grasping at straws for anything to throw something detrimental into the mix. You know, oh, Barack, his birth certificate comes from somewhere else. You know, he's a Muslim. You know, there were all these hate tactics that were thrown in that I have never, ever seen in the election process prior to this one.
All right.
Okay. Is it my turn now?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Hey,
uh-oh.
Hey, it's your turn when I say so, baby puppy.
It's your turn.
All right, Homer, it's your turn.
All right. Let's talk about that for a second.
Uh-oh.
All right. Now, granted, on AboveTopSecret.com, the home we all know and love, there was a lot of mention about everything that you said, Johnny. However, understand this, not once, not one time, did the Republican National Committee ever come out with any mention of Bill Ayers, Obama's preacher, the fact that he might be or might not be a Muslim, or his birth certificate? So I take offense at that.
Sarah Palin did.
Sarah Palin made some, but you know, you can't really count her in the Republican National
Committee. She's the running mate. What do you mean you can't count her?
But let's face it, guys.
You're wrong, because a lot of the warm up in the stump stops that they made for the speeches, there were a lot of the Republican local candidates for local elections going on in their different whistle stops. They were saying these things, and I'm not saying
it wasn't done on a local. Yeah, Bill, I agree, it was done on a local.
But they were people selected by the Republican Party to be the warm up speaker for the crowd before Palin or McCain showed up.
Okay. All right. I'm speechless.
Well, good.
But I do have a comment about what we originally were talking about.
All right. Blow us away.
Blow us away. I agree with Bill in the fact that I don't think there was any one issue. Obama had a safety net, and what Obama's safety net was, George Bush. People were so disenfranchised, and I hate that word, but they were so disenfranchised with George Bush that, you know, I really – Kucinich probably could have become president if he'd have got the nod instead of Obama. And Obama's sitting right now in a win-win situation. If he blows it, he can always step back and say, hey, you know, look at what I inherited. And if he does turn this country around, then he's going to possibly become one of the greatest presidents we've ever had.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I remember watching the Chris Rock HBO special, and I can't say some of the same words he used.
Thank you.
But basically his joke was that George Bush screwed things up so much that a black man could become president.
I do remember that. Well, you know, I mean, my take on it is pretty much like Bill's is. You know, I think to me the difference was how he came across on camera. And you can pull any of the debates out you want to. McCain always seemed agitated to me. Now, that was just, you know, me. I mean, sitting out there, and I was, you know, I tell you, now this is what's really funny. I can't stand politics or religion as far as a conversation or a debate thing. I mean, I would suck at it. I don't like discussing politics. I don't like discussing religion because it's a no-win thing. But I was very much enthralled with seeing the debates. It was the first time in years, 20 years, that I watched the entire debate process. And in every one of them, I mean, my take on it, and I'd like to get y'all's opinions on the thing, but my take on it was that because he seemed so at ease, as Bill had said previously, and he just seemed more presidential. You know, and I love, you know, and here again, I'm gonna sidebar and say, I personally love John McCain, a military man after my own heart, POW. You know, we were both in Vietnam at the same time, approximately. You know, I have nothing but tremendous respect for John McCain and everything he stands for as an American and an ex-soldier and what he believes in. But as far as coming across on the screen, I thought Barack Obama, every time they got up head-to-head, was more poised, more graceful, and as Bill said, came across more intellectual. And I think maybe that was an appeal. Bill, is that kind of where you were going with your comment?
Yeah, and that leads to another comment. And I want to toss this out, and then I have a follow-up comment to it. He really is a for all measures that you would apply, a bona fide intellectual, and quite possibly one of the most, if not the most, intellectual president we've had since Jefferson. I mean, sure, there are some presidents like, you know, Clinton was clearly very smart. He had a few other issues. Kennedy, very, very intellectual guy. But he really didn't have sort of the upper echelon educational credentials that Obama brings to the fore. And can you recall, I mean, I guess Stevenson was a really intellectual guy who ran for president and he got trumped. But, I mean, is he really the most bona fide intellectual we've had in office since Jefferson?
Oh, geez. Okay. I'll pass. I'll pass. John, you got do you think that Barack comes across as the most intellectual president we've ever had since Jefferson?
Let's see here.
Didn't know it was going to be a test, did you?
Yes, I did. And I would have studied up for it.
History.
Yeah. For some reason, what was running through my head was because we were talking about the composure and the demeanor. And I also would like to say God bless John McCain for serving our country the way he did. And I respect the man highly for that. But the one thing that was running through my head while Bill was talking was I recall back that when debates were first starting to be televised, and I believe it was the Nixon-Kennedy debate.
Yeah.
Am I correct on that?
Yes.
That was the first televised debate. That the reason why supposedly Kennedy won was because Nixon did not come across well on TV.
Exactly. He was sweating. He was clearly sweating and uneasy under the lights where – after the fact, it came out that Nixon was just in a hotter part of the stage, and Kennedy wasn't, and Nixon was sweating, and Kennedy wasn't, and that was it.
But as far as demeanor goes, I think that there are, in a weird out of the box way of thinking, I think Obama has some of those similar Kennedy qualities. When he is speaking and when he is doing his presentation. Am I wrong in that?
Well, you know, let's talk about that. Let's go ahead.
I want to hear Homer's take on the intellectual aspect.
Okay. Lay it on us, Homer.
I was just waiting for this opportunity. To me, charisma is not intellect. I've studied Obama's record, and I have just not seen enough true Obama in his Senate actions or his campaigning
I'm not talking about his political record. I'm talking about his background, his what he's done at Harvard and the intellectual side of things that he's done before he got into politics.
Didn't Bush go to Harvard? I mean,
he didn't open any books.
Yeah.
and Bill, you could be right. And trust me, what I'm doing here or what I'm saying here is I'm not refuting your statement. I'm just reserving my opinion to see what happens now.
Sure. Sure. Kiss the boss's ass.
Yeah. ass kisser.
The reason I bring that up is we've seen in parts of this campaign and previous campaigns where there's almost an attempt to have a bit of a backlash or a negativity assigned to elitists or people who are really smart. I mean, we saw Palin do that because, well, she had to make fun of people who were smart because she wasn't.
Yeah, but she's hot. Yeah,
well, there you go. I mean,
yeah, but we have female members, so I can't say what I would normally say, my standard little pat answer.
I'm not that stricken by her because I tend to want women to also be smart. So, you know, there you go. But this goes back to one of the last politicians I really personally like was Patrick Moynihan, and I met him would have been early 90s when I was starting another business, and he came into the area for this big conference. I had a chance to talk with him, and then there was another state representative there from more of a local standpoint. And we were talking, and I said to him, you know, you're clearly a well-educated guy who's got an incredible grasp on social issues, history, economics, you name it. He was incredibly sharp. You know, you asked him questions, and he'd give you a detailed, insightful answer at almost anything you can think of. And I asked him, why aren't you running for president? We need somebody who's this smart in the office. And the state senator who was also there, part of the discussion, said, because the American people won't vote for a smart guy. They don't want somebody who comes across smarter than them. And we've seen that sentiment quite a bit in a lot of campaigns. And I'm really happy to finally see someone who is smart who's actually going to sit in the office.
All right. Well, let's go into my Kennedy sidebar that I was going to roll us into. You know, there's been a lot of people in the mainstream media that have portrayed Barack Obama as a black Kennedy. And I'm just curious what each of your takes on the thing. John, if you'll start us off, please.
I believe I already did.
Sorry, will you start us off again, please?
Sure. You know, a lot of people seem to think that there are a lot of under and overtones with Barack being perhaps a lot like the black Kennedy, as I pretty much say the same thing that I did 3 to 5 minutes ago.
I love that. Well, you know, that's because we kept losing people, and I wasn't sure if we got that point out, John, and that's why I wanted you to reiterate what your statement was, since we got sidebarred before we got a chance to
everybody say their thing.
Yeah, right. Hello. Hello.
Hi.
It's
Hi.
A sign. Right there.
John, hey there. Wow. John.
Would you like me to say it again?
No, screw you. No, screw you. We'll go to somebody else that hadn't said anything. All right, Bill, what's your take on him being the black Kennedy of the country now?
He's Obama's tempo of speech is very much like a mashup of Kennedy and a Baptist minister.
Yes.
And that's how he comes across. As far as the potential that he holds, I think it's too soon to say he's a black Kennedy, but I think there is the potential to be the black Kennedy. He certainly already has shown that he is a person who represents a defining moment in a change of course of American history. Now, what that defining moment ends up being, you know, we still need to see.
All right, let's get a Republican view. Homer?
Well, my view is the fact I sincerely hope that Obama's not a black Kennedy, because, in my opinion, Kennedy was without merit other than being assassinated. I cannot historically see anything that Kennedy did other than almost bring us to the brink of World War that would make Kennedy, in my eyes, being anything other than an assassinated president, which gives him some sort of a heroic aura around him as far as the public's concerned.
Kennedy's unilateral nuclear weapons treaty with Khrushchev wasn't important.
Kennedy had some great advisors, Bill, and I'm not going to argue that. But we all know that a president is oftentimes defined by his advisors. I just was not that impressed with Kennedy. I don't think that intellect or even success is the all in all as far as being a good president. I mean, if it was, Romney would be our president right now. Because in my opinion, he's possibly the most intellectual and successful human being that's ever run for the position. But I do think that Obama has a good start right now with surrounding himself with good people. And by all appearances up to this point, it looks like he's going to do a good job of that. I don't put that much power. I don't assign that much to any one man. And I guess I'm unique in that. I just, you know, all the Bush bashing that went on, I just found it hard to believe that you know, George Bush as an individual is responsible for 80% of the things that he's been attributed to. And I think that Obama's going to be defined by the people he picks to surround himself with.
Well, except that one man. Yes, I mean, I sort of conditionally agree with what you're saying. One man's actions can't be responsible for a lot of the things that people blame Bush for, but one man can be either the inspiration or lack of inspiration for an entire administration. and it trickles down from the top. And Bush was clearly a lack of inspiration. He didn't provide the level of leadership that really was needed, where Obama shows that, yeah, he's not going to be one person that can personally influence a whole lot of change, but he can be that catalyst that inspires people. And hopefully he is that, and I think a lot of people are hoping that. And we're seeing that across the country and across the world, and hope is a powerful thing. And, you know, if all goes well, maybe some good will come of it. And, we're all waiting with bated breath to see.
All right. Well, now we're going to go into a segment of this show that I proudly call Dealer's Choice. And what Dealer's Choice is that we're going to go to each of our renowned speakers, and they're going to give us a topic, and we're going to discuss what is hot on their mind. And I guess we'll start with our CEO at AboveTopSecret.com.
I don't have one. I didn't know I was supposed to do this.
If you'll pay attention to your little encrypted message I sent you. All right. John, do you have one?
Well, okay. I wasn't planning on this again. These pop-up quizzes here are killing me. But here's something that I am a little bit concerned about. And probably just because I try to live in a what they call the PC world, politically correct world, for the lack of a better term. Since President-elect Obama's family is of mixed race, are we supposed to be categorically calling President-elect Obama a black man, or are we supposed to be calling him a person of color since he comes from a black father and a white mother? This is something that I worry about all the time. Even when I am out in public, when I meet somebody, I attempt to try to be politically correct. So I'm curious as to what your folks' thoughts are on this query.
Bill?
I'm going to, quote Chris Rock and his special. And I can't nearly do justice for his voice, and you can picture his grin and his tempo of delivery, where he says, "I know he's not really black, but we'll take what we can get."
Homer, how about you?
Real simple. We each define ourselves. If Barack Obama chooses to define himself as a black man, more power to him. I have no objections to that. I would like to think that race is a non-issue, which of course it isn't, but I would like to think that somewhere in our future it will become a non-issue and that we can each define ourselves. I don't define myself as being a Celtic American, although my roots are there, but I could if I choose to. I have no problem. I think his being of mixed race is actually something that's very pertinent to what he brings to the table as the president of the United States.
All right. I bet you do a real mean river dance, don't you?
Yeah, he does.
You have no clue.
Yeah, well, we don't want to see that right now. All right, but, you know, I mean, the mainstream media kept calling him African-American the entire night, so I thought that was kind of weird because he was not born in Africa, was he?
No.
Okay. And I had always, with the friends that are of color in the Dallas area, I have never referred to them as African American. I've always said, this is my, refer to them as black, my black friend, because that's how they kind of say, call themselves that. So I was very comfortable with that.
But guys that hang out at the Knights of Columbus, they call themselves Italian Americans.
Well, sure they do. Yeah, and I think that's marvelous, Bill. Thank you for bringing that up. I don't give a rat's ass. Anyway, here
point as to why.
Who cares, Bill? We're moving on. All right, now here's my round robin topic. Now it's kind of, you're going to think I'm cheating because actually it's kind of a takeoff on what Homer said, but it really makes sense to me. Do you believe, and Bill, I'm going to come to you first, so be prepared. Do you believe that if Barack Obama had not been, the key word not, had not been half and half, okay? If he was completely black, did not have any white people whatsoever in his family lineage, do you think he still would have won?
I like to think that he won because of his presentation and his message, not who he is. And given some of the voting results, I think that, yes, he still would have won if he was, you know, as you were saying, completely of African-American lineage.
John?
You know, that's an interesting query. I too would like to think that we, as both Bill and Homer have said, we need to possibly judge the man on his character rather than the color of one's character.
All right, Homer?
Not a chance in hell.
So you believe that if he had not been 50-50, that he would not have won?
Absolutely. He brought, there's no denying the fact that he brought a large percentage of the white vote. And I'm sorry, I live in the South, and I guess maybe because I live here, I have a tainted view. But prejudice, guys, is alive and well down here. And he got a lot of the white vote because of the fact that he has basically Caucasian features. He's by all accounts not a bad looking guy. And I think that if he'd have been of pure African-American descent, there's no way he'd be sitting where he is right now.
All right. Well, I'm going to wrap up my own question and say I totally disagree with you, and I want to tell you why. I'm from Texas, which sometimes they throw us in as a Confederate state also, Homer, so I know what you're talking about prejudicial areas. In fact, it really kind of chapped my butt, even though I was not a big voter or political guy, that Texas went with McCain personally. But, you know, we're kind of a Republican state, and I kind of bought into that. But I think Barack Obama would have won if he had been anybody, as long as he had the personality that he had, the ideas that he had, and the way that he expressed himself. I feel that we as Americans were so wanting something different, so wanting something changed, that I don't think skin color really had a lot to do with it. And I saw an interesting post that somebody made, and I apologize, I can't tell who it is because I don't remember. But they made an interesting post on AboveTopSecret.com that stuck with me. And I wish I had written it down, but I didn't. And it had to do with an elementary school, a fifth and sixth graders, and they were talking the day after, which was today, about the election and stuff. And the teacher told them, you know, how really important the election was as far as being historical. And without exception, every one of these fifth and sixth graders, and they're from like mid-America, I think they were like Illinois or down in somewhere in the middle of the state of the country. They said, well, don't you know it was important because the president now is going to be black? And they went, and so, you know, I think that says a lot about the way that the country is going, or at least I hope they're going that direction, to where it's not a matter of their skin color, it's not a matter of their religion or whatever they personally believe, but what they bring to the table. Can they help the economy? Can they help, you know, the senior citizens? Can they help the military? Can they keep us out of war? I think the issue has to do with that, you know, and to me that's the main thing. So Homer, I'm gonna let you do the last Wheel of Fortune.
We still have Bill after Homer.
Well, Bill said I'm gonna put Bill.
He
last.
Wanted to wait.
Yeah, I'm putting Bill last. Homer.
Bill, I want you to know it wasn't my choice to put you last. So
it was my choice.
You're ass kissing. What's that?
What a suck up. Will you just ask your question?
I want to talk for a second about the emotions. That were, in my opinion, a main factor in this entire campaign. And I want to relate a quick story with you. I spoke with a friend of mine who happens to be a sitting judge. He's African-American, and he's someone that I routinely go to for political advice and to sit and talk with him. And I was talking with him today, and he got tears in his eyes, guys. He said that he wished his parents had lived to have seen this day because they struggled so hard to get him where he was with his law degree and to have become a judge. And I think that of all the things that were most important here in this election was that viewpoint, that one man sitting there across from me with tears in his eyes. And here's the kicker. he voted for McCain. But he just he couldn't believe when he was sitting in front of his television and watching that acceptance speech with Obama and just wishing that his parents had been there with him to have seen that. And that affected me and really kind of turned me around a little bit as far as my attitude with Obama went. It really did.
Bill, you want to wrap us up with your Wheel of Fortune?
Well, aren't you going to respond to, I mean, isn't that the game we're playing here?
But I already responded. I already said how I felt.
No, but Homer brought up a new subject line. That's dealer's choice.
He did?
Yeah, he chopped liver. I'm chopped liver.
All right.
Oh,
I'll go ahead.
No, I'll go. No, I'll go.
I'll respond to Homer because clearly Dave wasn't listening, and maybe in my response.
I was listening.
It'll give Dave a chance to come up with something, and so he can sound like he was listening.
See what ass kissing gets you guys? You see?
Ass kisser. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, clearly the emotion of this time right now it has this country in sort of a warm fuzzy mode. There are a lot of people, as Homer said, that even though they did not support Obama, there's sort of a warm glow in the fact that wow, yeah, we made it this far. Even though as Homer you alluded to. He's, you know, you didn't think if he was fully black, he would have made it. You know, maybe he's our gateway black to the presidency, and that's fine because it does represent a change in attitude and what is accepted, and that emotion of the moment I hope sticks with us so that we really can be more closer, and that the political hate that's been festering over the past few years or decades rather starts to wash away, and hopefully it sticks.
John?
All right. Going on the emotion route, something I kind of noticed that seemed to be kind of a underlying theme in the road to candidacy for the presidency all throughout. When the election process started, you know, if you recall, even back when Senator Clinton was being pummeled by the media, there were certain aspects of it where, if I recall correctly, there was one particular aspect, as a matter of fact, when she was talking to, I don't know if it was the League of Women, excuse me, the League of Women or whatever, but she started to get a little teary-eyed, and there was a little bit of an emotional breakup on that. And then it was asked later on by a poll if whether or not America thought that that was good or bad, that possibly a future president was showing emotion on that. And it actually ended up pulling some more positive points her way in the weeks to come. And so I kind of agree that we are in this period, for the lack of a better term, only because Dave has been saying it so much, where we're a softer, kinder, gentler thought process may be going on. And that may be part of the reason why the president-elect, with his long-standing theme of it's time for a change, may have actually won over a few more of the more emotional voting side.
Wow. Okay, well, I think mine pretty much sums it up, and then Bill will let you do yours. I think mine pretty much says it up in that I think the thing that made me most misty-eyed was seeing the crowds in Times Square in New York City and seeing the huge crowd that was in Chicago. I was just so overwhelmed with emotion when they would pan into the audience. And, you know, and I mean, we mentioned this a little bit earlier. Maybe we didn't. Maybe I'm thinking of the mainstream media because I know they sure did. But it kind of chapped my butt a bit when they kept going to Harlem and trying to show what the reaction was going to be from the Harlem group. And I don't know, it just really, it chapped my butt. But at the same time, I looked at those faces of the people that are of African-American descent and black Americans that were born Americans. And I was overwhelmed with emotion. I really was. I cannot even fathom what it was like to walk in their shoes, that such something that we experienced together brought that kind of emotions out in them. And I mean, you know, you mentioned Oprah Winfrey bawling like a baby. She bawls like a baby anyway. But the one that really, I think, rocked me the most was Jesse Jackson, because of what Jesse Jackson said about Barack Obama, about wanting to dismember him in a comment that he made some weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago. And he was asked today by a CNN reporter, I believe, you know, how his emotions in Chicago changed from what he had made, the disparaging comment that he had made just weeks prior. And he said that, you know, he had always been very supportive of Barack, but that he allowed his anger to make a disparaging comment against him. But seeing Jesse Jackson in tears when he had a possibility at one time, a fleeting possibility, I believe, isn't that when Eddie Murphy did that bit about Jesse Jackson and running side to side, trying to keep from not being in the sights, where he was making fun of Jesse Jackson? I think he saw a fleeting moment that, you know, the timing was not right for Jesse Jackson when he had a possibility of having his hat thrown in the ring. And I think it was really, I think it brought it home to him to see, you know, Barack Obama bring the flag in.
And speaking of timing not being exactly right, that means we have one last Dealer's Choice member here to jump into the fray before we sign off. So, Bill, what is your choice?
Well, I'm going to throw a dark cloud on this. Probably a very dark cloud. And it goes to a lot of things we discussed in ATS and even back to the comparisons with Kennedy, unfortunately. We've seen a lot of discussion that if Obama's elected, he will be an assassination target. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. Combined with what has recently come out, where there's some...
Hold on. You don't necessarily disagree with the aspects of him being assassinated?
A target. I don't know if that'll be successful, but I firmly believe that there are people planning to try to do it.
Okay, but I want to just make this disclaimer, because it almost sounded like to me that you were saying that wouldn't be a bad thing if that happened.
Oh, no, there'd be a...
Okay, horrible. Thank you. Our members need to hear that. Our listeners need to hear that. Thank you.
No. Okay. No, I'm following the train of thought here.
Okay.
And I believe now there's three threads that make mention to rumors, not from completely unfounded sources, that Obama has a desire to rein in our intelligence services. And if you go back to Kennedy, that is one of the primary speculative reasons why he was assassinated, is exactly what he was planning to do. So we have two parallels here. Well, actually, one parallel with Kennedy, and then just in general, a lot of background noise that he represents so much of a fundamental change to everything, that he will be, unfortunately, a target for people who want to resist that change. And just, I can't imagine the emotion that overcame the world when Kennedy was assassinated. I just can't imagine how terrible it would be if that tragic event happened to Obama. And do you guys see that is a real concern over the next few months?
All right, I'll cut that out. I knew I was going to blow it sooner or later, Homer.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, actually, Bill, I agree with you. I think every redneck with a hunting rifle, and you know, you hear the snide little comments in the hallways, and it just infuriates me, because that's not the way we do things here in this country. And but I think it's an issue. And one of the things that was brought to my attention is when Barack was giving his speech last night, he was surrounded by bulletproof glass. And I think that's the first time I've ever actually seen that overt type of protection to someone giving the acceptance speech. I've personally never seen that.
John? And,
were you through, Homer?
Yes, go ahead, John.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's sad for me to even conceive this thought that there would be those that are still, and please, no offense to my Southern friends or to my redneck friends, but I still think it's sad that we have this non-savage, lost in the evolution trail of thought that we could even think like that. You know, I mean, my God, for right or wrong, just as we have had to do with our current president, he is our president. And we, you know, whether we disagree, just like with many friends and associates and family members, we may disagree with what they think or they're passionate about, but that doesn't mean that we stop loving them. And I'm not saying necessarily that we need to love Barack Obama, but we need to understand he is the guy in charge, and we need to set aside our differences.
Well, you know, when Bill threw this out, I mean, I knew sooner or later that we were going to have to address this issue, because I know we have all heard it times before, people making comments or whatever, and just wherever we happen to be, that people would say comments. I remember people here in Dallas even, and that's the sad thing, being that we're the city that assassinated Kennedy. I heard people say, you know, well, that they were going to vote for Barack Obama, but, you know, they were really concerned about the possibilities. And, I mean, we're really, if you'll excuse the expression, gun-shy about talking about anything to do with assassination in our city. But I think it's a real sad state of affairs when you have to stop and figure out all the angles on what to do to go above and beyond what you would do if Barack Obama was a white man. I cannot even begin to fathom the pain, the anguish, the anger that we all would go through if something like that ever happened. I know personally it would be like taking a knife to myself and stabbing myself in the heart. Because I believe this guy, and I didn't vote for him. I didn't vote for McCain either. I believe this guy really has a chance to turn things around. Whether he does or he doesn't is yet to be seen. But I believe at least he has a spirit that a lot of people, and I think that's the reason why you saw hundreds of thousands of people in the streets. Not since 9/11 have I seen that kind of unity in my life. I think I don't know. God, I hope you're wrong, Bill. I really hope
I certainly
wrong.
Hope I'm wrong too, but it's out there, and it's out there in a way that can't be ignored. I mean, clearly the Secret Service feels that way too, because early in his candidacy, before any other candidate, he had a special detail to protect him.
Correct.
Well, I hate to end on a bummer note, but we are out of time, and I want to thank the participants that we had.
Hey, we're ATS. We got to make people paranoid somehow.
Yeah, I know. But we want to thank the participants in this. And we need to do this every 4 years, guys. I want to thank the participants.
I didn't know 4 years ago.
Where were you guys 4 years ago? I don't know. We want to thank, of course, the Skeptic Overlord, a.k.a. Bill Irvin, from our CEO at AboveTopSecret.com and Above Network LLC. And we want to thank the co-host of the Above Politics show, our very own Homer Fife. And, of course, I want to thank my beloved partner from over a year, Mr. Johnny Anonymous.
And it still stinks underneath your wings, by the way.
I don't care. You got to start humming that song. So I want to talk to you guys off air, say goodbyes to you off air. But until next time, we appreciate everybody voting that voted. And those of you that didn't, you might want to think if your candidate didn't win, you might want to vote next time. So until then, on behalf of all of us, have a great evening.
Bing, bing, bing.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.AboveTopSecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll be right back.